From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Emerging Artist Night tonight. Lex has everybody's website posted at coasttocoastam.com, so go on up and take a look at some of the work they're doing. We'll be playing their songs during the first couple hours of bumper music tonight for you. Next hour, Intuition with Dr. Mona Lisa Schultz. Get ready for that. Here's what's happening. Teams of federal and state workers fanned out Sunday along Montana's Yellowstone River to gauge the environmental damage from a ruptured ExxonMobil pipeline. Here we go again. That spewed tens of thousands of gallons of crude into the famous waterway. An EPA agency representative said that only a small fraction of the spilled oil is likely to be recovered. In Los Alamos, New Mexico, summer rain giving a big boost to firefighters battling a huge forest fire near Los Alamos, giving authorities enough confidence now to allow about 12,000 people to return home for the first time in nearly a week. A treasure trove of gold and silver jewelry, coins, and precious stones said to be worth billions of dollars has been found in a Hindu temple in southern India. The valuables have an estimated preliminary worth of over $11.2 billion. Thousands of necklaces, coins, and precious stones have been kept in at least five underground vaults at the temple, which is renowned for its intricate sculptures. Well, if you are put off by those red light cameras and the expensive tickets they generate, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety has a flash for you. You are in the minority. The cameras appear to be gaining some traction, they say, as an acceptable safety device. The Institute released a survey showing that two-thirds of the drivers in 14 major cities where red light cameras have been placed for a while actually support them. Among the survey findings, 42% of the respondents strongly favor red light camera enforcement. 82% believe that those who run red lights pose a serious threat to their personal safety. And 60% of the drivers say it is acceptable for revenue from camera citations to exceed the cost of camera enforcement. St. Louis University professor Dr. Ken Warren, and he talks about the red light cameras with us. Ken, what do you think of this survey?
It's total nonsense. I got hold of it and I read it, and everything's wrong with it. From being a push-pull, it reeks with being a push-pull, in the sense that they start asking questions about red light cameras causing accidents. They talk about red lights. You should have red lights to stop people from having these accidents. And then they get into actually asking people whether they are for them or not. In other words, George, the point is here, they're setting the question up on red light cameras like push polls do by saying essentially that aren't you afraid that people are running red lights and so forth? Doesn't that pose a danger? And then they ask you whether or not you're for red light enforcement. But they only polled 300 people, which is totally unacceptable to any reputable polling firm, by the way. 400 is bare minimum that produces a plus or minus 5% error. They're talking about interviewing only 300 that produces 5.7% error.
Well, all you have to do, Ken, is just, take any driver, point at these red light cameras and ask them what they think of it. Most of them would say, take them down.
Well, and they did. In 15 states that had referendums in these cities within the states, in 15 out of 15, George, that's 100% of the voters voted them down. Right. Now, this institute, by the way, the insurance companies are in a panic because voters are voting them down everywhere, and they're about to go on the ballot in Washington State, and the red light camera people are trying to get the vote from being placed on the ballot. Well, if they think this poll is so accurate, why not place it on the ballot and let voters vote on it? Well, what's going to happen is the voters are going to vote the red light cameras down like they have in 15 out of 15 other places.
That's the name of the game. Ken, thanks so much. Dr. Ken Warren, St. Louis University professor. In New York, police say a motorcyclist participating in a protest ride against helmet laws in upstate New York, died after he flipped over the bike handlebars and hit his head on the pavement. In Orlando, Florida, a worker was killed while performing maintenance on an Orlando Thrill Park ride as park guests watched in horror while he dangled from a safety harness. The 30-year-old worker was killed, crushed internal injuries there. A 2-year-old Chinese girl left unattended, fell 10 stories from her family's apartment window, survived in critical condition, but survived after being caught by a woman who was walking by. The woman looked up, saw this little toddler falling, and caught her. The toddler in critical condition, internal bleeding there. What about the secrets your doctor doesn't want you to know and some other things that happen during plastic surgery? Up next, we're going to be talking In Stitches, a memoir. Dr. Tony Young, Coast to Coast AM. That's next. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie. Dr. Tony Yoon, MD, is a board-certified plastic surgeon. Tony made his national television debut on Dr. 90210, has been a frequent guest on the Rachel Ray Show, the CBS Early Show, and he's written articles for Radar Magazine, MSNBC.com, CBSNews.com. Tony's blog, by the way, which is linked up at CoastToCoastAM.com, is the most popular blog by a plastic surgeon in the country. And there's a reason we have him on here tonight, this hour, because we're going to talk about some things that your doctor just doesn't want you to know. Tony, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, George? Thank you for having me on.
My pleasure, and thanks for spending your Independence weekend with us. In Stitches, what's this all about?
Well, this is a book that I wrote that really tells the story of a young Korean-American nerd who grew up to become a plastic surgeon. And really, it's the true story of what it's really like behind the scenes in becoming a doctor. And there's never really been a book written about becoming a doctor that, in my opinion, revealed the real truth about what it's like behind the scenes, kind of the gory details, but along with really some of the hidden humor and the insecurities that doctors actually have.
At what point in your life did you say, hey, I want to be a doctor, and then a plastic surgeon?
Well, actually, I describe in the book how when I was born, my dad actually decided I was going to be a doctor that day. So my father is what we call a tiger father, and there was that book written by Amy Chua, Battle Hymn of the Tiger Mother. And my dad was very, very similar. And so the day I was born, he decided I was going to become a doctor. That kind of progressed to the point where in medical school, I wasn't sure what type of doctor I wanted to be, and I described a story in my book about this little child who was actually mauled by a raccoon, and to see the plastic surgeon work to try to reconstruct this child's face, that was when I was hooked on my field.
Tony, let me ask you, too, while we're talking about plastic surgery, horrors or otherwise, the woman a few years ago who was attacked by the chimpanzee that literally tore her face off, how many surgeries does somebody have to go through before they can even get them to that point of being able to present them out to the public?
Yeah, it's very interesting because things have really changed. Even when I wrote the book and I started writing about 5-6 years ago, a centerpiece story in my book is this little child that had his face eaten off by a raccoon. Very, very similar type of thing. You know, back then the plastic surgeon showed me, and you know, when this happened, this was over 10 years ago, but he showed me how it was going to be a lifetime of several surgeries, and the person would never end up looking, you know, quite quote-unquote normal. Well, now with face transplants, I mean, it's like space-age surgery now. I mean, we're taking one person's face and putting it on another. It's like that movie Face Off with Nicolas Cage and John Travolta.
Right.
So things are changing now, I mean, at a very, very rapid pace. And the next step actually in our field, and I think in medicine, are stem cells.
Now, how would that work?
Well, the deal with stem cells is that these are cells that can turn into any other cell of the body. They're such young cells that, let's say, if you put stem cells into a nose that's been torn off, the idea is that that can help recreate the nose. And a lot of surgeons now are studying it for other types of diseases. As a plastic surgeon, I deal with a lot of women who've had breast cancer and have their breasts removed. Now, typically, we can reconstruct that area now either with implants or with using tissue from another part of the body. The hope eventually is that stem cells can actually create a new breast.
Well, that's dramatic all by itself. It really is. I live out in the L.A. area sometimes, and when I do, I run into a lot of folks who've been on movies, and I'm not going to mention their names. – But they've had a little bit too much plastic surgery, Tony. They should have stopped many surgeries ago. What compels them to keep getting surgery? And then why does it look like it's been botched? It really hasn't, but I mean, they just look horrible. What happened?
Exactly. Well, I actually spent a year out in Beverly Hills, and part of my Beverly Hills experience I wrote about in Stitches. And there's a number of things that are going on. The number one thing that you see when people really look strange is a psychiatric condition called BDD, or body dysmorphic disorder. And this is actually a situation where a person looks in the mirror and they see something different than what everybody else sees. So, you know, this person with BDD may have a little bump on their nose. And to us, we see it as a little bump. But this person, to that person, that bump is the size of a grapefruit. And so they undergo these multiple surgeries as ways to try to treat a disorder, defect that doesn't even exist. So that's one thing that we see. And in the general public, we estimate that BDD exists in about 1% of the population. However, in plastic surgery patients, it's probably higher, maybe 10%. And I would argue in Hollywood, that number may be up to 25%.
Oh, my God. Well, why doesn't the doctor simply say, hey, you've had enough. I'm not going to do it.
I think a lot of it honestly deals with money. And that was one of the things, too, that I wrote about are the different types of plastic surgeons out there. And, you know, I do a lot of cosmetic plastic surgery. And I look at myself as a very moral surgeon. I mean, I turn probably 1 out of 5 patients down for surgery. I had one day a couple weeks ago where I turned 3 out of 4 patients down who came to see me in consultation. I just didn't think it was right for them. That being said, a lot of doctors do go into cosmetic surgery as a way to make money. And so their consultations are not coming in to say, well, what do you think is best for me? It's a, do you do this surgery and how much does it cost? And there are literally doctors out there that will do anything that people pay them to do.
Well,
and
you know,
there's a major problem there.
Years ago, I had LASIK surgery on my eyes. You couldn't call that cosmetic surgery, but it's pretty darn close. I mean, you're looking for perfection, and so people would do that. When people look in the mirror, as you mentioned, is it like a person who might be thin, but they think they're heavy? And they go on this horrible diet, they become anorexic. Is it that kind of a thing, that kind of a syndrome?
It is. It's very similar. And you know, to tell the truth, society is not kind to women. And women, you know, we have all these photos on magazine covers. I mean, I had a patient of mine when I was out in Beverly Hills who she actually airbrushed magazine covers. And she said, you know, Dr. Yoon, there is not a magazine cover out there that has not been airbrushed. And now we even have these stories of these women whose bodies are airbrushed so that they look thinner on these magazine covers. So society is not kind to women and our expectations of how they should look, especially now when you have all this reality TV and you have these young stars that, you know, Heidi Montag, 10 plastic surgeries in one day.
It's definitely
going overboard. And, you know, unfortunately, this is a society-wide problem. You know, plastic surgery does play into that, and that's one thing about my field that I really do not like. And that's why in my book, In Stitches, I do discuss some of the reconstructive aspects of plastic surgery that I think help for us to redeem our specialty.
Tony, what has been perhaps one of the most dramatic forms of plastic surgery that you know of, that you've witnessed?
I think the face transplants really, which have happened over the last 2 years or so, is a huge step for us in a different direction. I mean, prior to facial transplants, you know, I had actually a patient who came to see me when I was in residency, and this patient had a lot of his face burned off in an industrial accident. And at the time, it was the best we could do was just skin graft and try to put skin from his leg onto his face, and it would just never look quite right. So really the future right now, the current, what we're seeing now are these transplants, but then the future hopefully would be these stem cells. And these are just, I mean, it's like space age technology coming to our field now.
I knew a guy 25, 30 years ago, I don't know what's happened to him since, who was working in a steel mill out here in the St. Louis area, and it blew up. The steel, this hot molten steel, blew up in his face, took off about half his face, and, you know, they gave him as much reconstructive surgery as they could, but, you know, they couldn't get him back to normal, obviously, but it got to a point where he just didn't care. He went out in public. He didn't wear a mask. He was who he was, and, you know, he would golf and go places and things, and you know, initially people were shocked when they saw him because they're not used to that. But eventually, you know, in time, you know, as the evening went on, people got used to him. They laughed with him. They, you know, and he did his thing. But that's pretty gutsy for him to do that, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And, you know, our society is based so much on our appearance. And as a plastic surgeon, I'm obviously keenly aware of that. And I actually also tell, I mean, for me, I've actually had work done, and I can kind of understand to an extent where some of my patients come from. When I grew up, and I discussed this quite in depth in the book, but I actually had a jaw that was probably two or three times the size of Jay Leno's. And I ended up going through this painful surgery to break my jaw and set it back.
God.
And honestly, to me, I thought that that was the beginning of a, you know, before I had my jaw broken, I couldn't find a date to save my life. I was this skinny Asian kid with big glasses, braces, and this huge jaw. And I had it set back. I gained about 30 pounds of muscle mass, went to college. And I thought at the time that this was going to change my life and I was going to become this Adonis and be dating women left and right. Well, I couldn't find a date for 4 years after that.
See?
So where appearance obviously is important, and to some extent in society, it's definitely not everything.
No, it sure isn't. You've got to have that personality first. You obviously have got that now. And you just build up your self-confidence, don't you?
Yeah, you know, and the funny thing was is I had this surgery, and I actually describe I went on a date in college. I finally found somebody who would go out with me. Well, she ended up turning into, I found out she was a carny. She worked in a carnival as a fire eater, and I was so nervous on this date, I ended up talking to her about my mom the whole time until she left the date early. So it wasn't for me until medical school where I actually met a group of friends who helped me get confidence in myself. And that's where, you know, I was actually able to attract somebody. And I think it's that kind of cliche, really, that you need to like yourself before somebody can like you. But that was the case, and that's a huge part, I think, of the book that I wrote about, that I hope people can they can read about. And, you know, I think we've all felt like an outsider at some point in our lives.
What's the craze now, Tony, with big lips on women? I mean, my gosh, they're all trying to do this.
Yeah. Well, we call it the trout pout. And, you know, how do you tell if somebody's had fake lips? Well, the easiest thing is there is actually a very normal proportion of the bottom lip to the upper lip. The bottom lip should be about 50% thicker or wider than the upper lip. And for some reason, patients get this wrong all the time, and celebrities do too, and they want their upper lip to actually be larger than the lower lip, like a trout. And that's the number one way we can spot that. So if you see somebody, and I'll tell you, Lindsay Lohan, in my opinion, is the most obvious example, where the upper lip is larger than the lower lip, that's a big sign. And I see this all the time in patients who come in to ask me about it. I think what happens, though, is that people, as we age, our lips do get thinner. And I notice that in a lot of my patients. And so a conservative enhancement of the lips, I think, is very, very reasonable. The problem is when do you stop? And the crazy thing now is that you see these people on the Real Housewives of Orange County and Beverly Hills, and their lips are these plumped up sausages. And in some circles, that's actually becoming the norm because it is so popular. Here in Michigan, where I'm at, it's not like that yet. And I hope it doesn't get there because,
I
get is natural results.
I was born in Detroit and worked at most of the TV stations you're familiar with out there.
Oh, yeah.
And, for years. I went to the University of Detroit, as a matter of fact. I had a tiger dad, too. He wanted me to be a dentist. And so I went through 2 years of pre-dent at the University of Detroit, where my love was always broadcasting. And uh-huh. So I escaped the dental curriculum, and he didn't know about it. And once he found out about it, he didn't talk to me for 2 months.
Wow.
Until one day he saw my name on the credits of a television show on Channel 7 in Detroit, and it popped up there, and he said, "Is that you?" And I said, "Dad, I told you that's what I'm doing now," while I was still going to school. And all of a sudden, he loved it after that, but it took a long time.
Yeah, my father's really gotten a kick out of this book. I mean, I was deathly afraid of showing it to him, and because I thought, oh, I write a lot about him and some of the crazy things. I mean, when I grew up, he would tell me, oh, you're going to be a neurosurgeon or a cardiothoracic surgeon or a transplant surgeon. I mean, these just like intense surgical specialties. I didn't know anything about that. The funny thing, just like I think with your father, is my father's come around 180 degrees. I mean, I wrote this this essay that was published in USA Today just right before Father's Day about my dad and about growing up with a tiger.
They become proud of us. Tony, we're going to hit this quick break. We'll be right back with you. We'll take some calls. And happy birthday to Coast listeners Sky in Cape Cod. Hey, have a great birthday and good luck with your writing career. That'll be fun. In a moment, we come back with Dr. Tony Young. We'll take your phone calls, and we'll also talk about his book, In Stitches, right here on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with our special guest this hour, Dr. Tony Young, and we are talking about his book, In Stitches, a memoir. We're going to take your calls with him this half hour as well. Tony, why do you say in the book that July is one of the worst months to get sick? Why that month?
It's funny. I actually wrote a CNN.com article just last week that created a firestorm of controversy. July is the first month that interns begin. And what an intern basically is we finish medical school and we have an MD after our name. And I wrote in this article that I finished medical school with an MD after my name and a short white coat that I wore, or a long white coat now because it's short when you're a medical student, long when you become a doctor, but with absolutely no practical medical knowledge. And actually, a recent study was performed that showed in teaching hospitals, the mortality rate due to medication-related errors went up 10% in the month of July. And this is a month that new interns start. And so I wrote this article, and oh my gosh, it was a firestorm of doctors coming out upset with me, nurses coming out saying, yeah, go Dr. Yu, and you're telling the truth. But it's true. I mean, teaching hospitals, yet this 10% increase in mortality rate due to these medication-related errors does not occur in non-teaching hospitals, just in hospitals where you've got interns and residents.
That's something else. And so, you know, let's not get sick in the month of July, folks.
So I wrote at the end of this article that if you know, that we need to learn, you know, as doctors, and that's part of my book, is, you know, we need to learn how to be a doctor. We need to learn this stuff. So be patient if you have an intern and you're at a teaching hospital in July. They're just getting started. And then ask your nurse if your intern knows what they're doing.
What does the future hold for plastic surgery? We've seen how far it has advanced over the last 15, 20 years. What's the next 20 years going to look like?
Well, I think the interesting thing over the last maybe 10 to 20 years is the emergence of cosmetic plastic surgery. And really prior to about 10, 15 years ago, the numbers of cosmetic work being done, breast augmentation, facelifts, liposuction, has been very, very minimal. And really over the last 10, 15 years, it has exploded. The interesting thing that we're doing now is we're trying to find less invasive ways to get the same type of results. And so what I've said and I'm on the Rachel Ray Show regularly, but one of the things I told Rachel on one of the segments was that the holy grail of plastic surgery is losing fat without actual surgery or needles or pain at all.
Right.
And that's one of the big things that we're seeing. There are actually a couple of devices out there right now. They're not super effective at doing it, but we're starting to actually be able to treat people non-surgically without any pain, downtime, needles, or anything, and cause them to lose fat.
I have been reading about laser work. Does that work on people instead of surgery?
Well, lasers are one of the newest things that we've been working on technically is how do you take a laser, which, you know, the laser technology, when you think about it, is very, very simple. You know, what is a laser? Laser is light that is concentrated to the extent where it can create heat. And when we use lasers in plastic surgery, what we find is that lasers will affect a certain spectrum of light. And so certain lasers that we use affect the color red. And so when people have, let's say I treat patients who have scars and the scars are red and inflamed, we can zap them with a laser like this that can take care of the color red. There are other lasers that affect technically the color of water. And these are lasers that we used in the past and not so much now that literally burn anything that has water in it. Well, our bodies are what? You know, 70% water, so it just burns whatever it touches. Well, there are lasers now that the spectrum of light that they treat it's so mild that there's no pain associated with this at all. And there's one treatment that's called the Zirona, where just like I mentioned, I mean, this is a treatment. It's almost like a laser pointer, and you point this at your body. It's 6 treatments over 2 weeks, and people lose an average of 3 to 4 inches. No pain, no downtime at all.
That's pretty remarkable. Let's take some calls here, Tony. We'll pick it up by going to Melissa, driving around in Indiana, east of the Rockies. Hi, Melissa. You're on with Dr. Tony Yoon. Hi.
Yes, this is Melissa. You know, I'm the one that has the Grammy named George.
That's you.
He's doing great. He's now 18 and a half inches long, and I just got my first ever digital camera, so I'm going to try to get some pictures of him and have a friend help me email them to you.
Okay. We'll wait. I can't wait.
Yeah. What I wanted to ask the doctor was, this friend of mine, I went just and my mom on my way home from visiting up in Indianapolis, just had her third C-section, her third child that way. And this wound has come undone. And she was telling me tonight it was really more like plastic surgery they did on her than true stitches. Is that normal?
The funny thing is there's this urban legend that people have actually tummy tucks at the time of a C-section. And that's nothing I have ever seen. There was actually a rumor years ago that this happened with Britney Spears, which is completely untrue. There's a number of things that could be going on. Number one, you know, with this loose skin, it's possible that they've sutured it together. But anytime you have a C-section, there's going to be a scar. And then you typically want to give it a good 6 months or more prior to considering having anything done, because the body continues to change after having a baby. And that's usually what I recommend, is give it at least 6 months. You know, try to get your weight down to the pre-pregnancy weight if you can. And that's when you really think about if you're going to do anything about the scar or any loose skin or anything like that.
Tony, do some of these products that try to reduce scars really work?
To a smaller extent, yes. You know, I do a lot of surgery, and I encourage my patients to get on scar creams, but I don't encourage them to use a specific one, because unlike a medication, like let's say an antibiotic, it's proven that it works in this specific manner. Scar creams typically are more along the lines of a cosmetic or an herbal, where they may help the scar, but there's no guarantee that it's going to prevent a scar from thickening or anything like that. So I put it into those categories of it may help, but it may do absolutely nothing, but it's probably not going to hurt.
Now, look, keep in mind, I'm a poster boy for late night radio, but what's one of the most bizarre plastic surgeries you've ever heard about?
Oh, there's a lot of them out there. there's some crazy things that are kind of urban legends in plastic surgery that you hear. Stories like Cher having a rib taken out to thin her body. There are some of these that are actually true, where people overseas are actually breaking bones in the legs to try to add height to them.
No
I think
way.
If you're looking at realistic surgeries that you can have done here in the States that are kind of strange, you know, there are people who are having six-pack surgeries, so guys who have the fat sucked out of their stomach to try to make it look like a six-pack, but it's not a six-pack of actual muscle. It's actually a six-pack of fat. I do some kind of strange procedures. I had one that was done on myself where my jaw was broken and set back, similar to the opposite thing of what Bristol Palin has recently admitted to having done. And that's a painful surgery of literally breaking your jaw. So there are these kind of, you know, surgeries that, unlike a breast augmentation or liposuction, that are definitely fringe, but do definitely work.
And this is all speculation. With 6.5 billion people on this planet, how many people do you think are out there that look identical to who we might be? Hundreds of them? Thousands of them? What do you think?
When I was a kid, I heard this rumor that if you walk into your actual twin, that the next day you're supposed to die, which I'm sure is completely untrue. You know, we're all unique, and it's a cliche, but it's true. I mean, there are people that we may resemble, but you know, our genes are unique, our DNA is unique, everybody looks different. You know, what's kind of funny, and this is a little bit different from what you asked me, but you see these celebrities in Hollywood who look great, but I tell you, the vast majority of them have had something done. And it's funny because now they're having children, and the children don't look anything like the two celebrities actually do in real life.
Well, I had a friend of mine during the tragedy of 9/11, unfortunately, he looked at that picture of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, and he said, George, this is you with 75 more pounds on you. And I went, no, it's not. And I looked at the guy, and I went, you know, he's got the same shape eyebrows as I do and everything else. And I tried to imagine myself with 70 pounds on my body and up to my face. And I went, well, you never know. You've got features. But you can only put your eyebrows somewhere and your eyes only look so much and your lips. There's got to be a lot of people that I think would be almost identical.
Well, there's only so much, though, you can do to change somebody. I mean, one of the features of BDD, that body dysmorphic disorder I mentioned to you before, are people who actually want to look exactly like celebrities. And there was a show on MTV called I Want a Famous Face, where these young people would have surgery to try to look like different celebrities. I get people who come in and they, you know, they bring photos of their celebrities, but I mean, it's impossible. And there's this, something that I wrote in one of my articles is, you know, you can't build a Porsche using the parts of a Hyundai. I mean, we can make people definitely look different and look better,
sure,
but not look like a certain somebody that they want to look like.
Sarah in Elizabeth, New Jersey, you're up with us. Hi, Sarah. Go ahead.
Hi. I was wondering, I cannot have anesthesia of any type, and I'm very tough. And I'm wondering, would there be any way of, I know there's some procedure where you fill in the line between the outside of the nostrils down to the corner sides of the mouth. If something could be done like that, was filled in with fat and something to the jawline, you know, just it's starting to not look like a nice tight jawline, you know, I'm 50.
First question.
So it's not horrible, but.
Yeah, my first question with you would be, what type of anesthesia can you not tolerate? Is it the general anesthetic where you're completely asleep?
Well, I can't have local anesthesia due to a liver problem, and I've looked into general anesthesia and trying to determine which liver pathways they go through because I know which ones I have trouble with, and they don't seem to have worked that out, so I don't think I want to risk either.
You have a couple of options. There's actually an interesting treatment, which I haven't had the best experience with, but it's called CellFill, where you can actually draw a person's blood, spin down actually the platelets and the fiber and the growth factors, and then re-inject it into parts of the face.
Which parts do you re-inject, though?
It's actually the platelets and the growth factors and the fibrin. And what we find is that supposedly, like I said, my experience with it hasn't been as good as some other surgeons, but supposedly it helps to create some new collagen. A prime place to inject it are just those wrinkles that you had mentioned. Now, tightening up the neckline, if you can't, you have a local anesthetic, would be extremely difficult. Your best option for something like that would probably be a series of laser-type treatments or radiofrequency, and there's a ton of them out there. One of them that I have is called Refirm, and there's no pain associated with it, but it's not, you don't get the lift of an actual facelift. So there are definitely options out there. I would definitely recommend you see a board certified plastic surgeon who's going to be able to give you some of your options. But not being able to have a local anesthetic is probably going to mean you're not going to be a great candidate for surgery.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Well, good luck, Sarah. What do you think, Tony, of some of these plastic surgeons in other countries, people who go to them across the borders, maybe in Europe, because they want special procedures? Is that risky?
Well, there's a story. Yeah, the answer is yes. And there's this scary story about Usher and his, I think, ex-wife now, Tamika Foster, was in Brazil. And these celebrities will go to these other countries. And a lot of the reason why is because they can get confidentiality out there because people don't recognize them. But she went to Brazil, was going to have liposuction. And even prior to the surgery actually beginning with the anesthetic, she arrested on the table. And she was kept in the ICU overnight. She ended up doing fine in the end, never had the surgery done. But I tell you, George, the last place I want to be if I'm having a medical complication is in some third world country.
Yeah,
you know, I mean,
true.
Usher's got a lot of cash on him that he can pay for a private flight to fly her back to the States. But the majority of people, it's just not possible. And I hear horror stories all the time of people who have surgery in countries like Mexico where, you know, sterility is not an issue. And if you have a complication and you're out in Mexico, God forbid, good luck, you know, in those hospitals. And how are you going to even pay for it in the end? I mean, it's very, very dangerous. You know, the number one thing is the United States, really, as much as we have issues with our healthcare system, is the safest place to have surgery. And if you're having an elective cosmetic procedure, find a good board-certified plastic surgeon in the United States and don't risk your life going to some third-world country.
Tony, what is it about a good-looking person, an attractive person, man or woman? They walk into a room, everybody notices, everybody's in awe. They're just so darn good-looking. What is it that makes the mind of all these other people in the room notice that one person?
You know, I wish I knew, because then I'd do something about myself. No, I mean, it's, you know, there. It's interesting. There are actually books that have been written, and there's a plastic surgeon out in L.A. Who wrote a book where it was literally looking at the various attractive faces through Hollywood and creating a mathematical equation for beauty, which doesn't make a lot of sense to the average person. But what this doctor did was he took people who he considered to be, you know, examples of classic beauty that absolutely gorgeous, 10 out of 10. So like a Marilyn Monroe type. Right. And then others that he would say are very attractive, but not the 10 out of 10 starlet. Let's say he used as an example, what was her name? Misha Barton from the OC. And then an example of somebody who would be traditionally considered somewhat unattractive. And I love Rhea Perlman from Cheers, but let's just use her as an example. You know, she's not Marilyn Monroe. And by taking the various measurements of the face, he developed this extended long equation that supposedly works if you look in Hollywood and that type of thing. I think a lot of it has to do with symmetry, you know, and that's what a lot of us looked at, symmetry of the face. I think there's certain features of our face that we find attractive of the other gender. So for women find men who have a stronger jawline more attractive than men with a Andy Gump type small jaw. And I think for men, it's a number of things, just like, you know, the fuller lips on a Scarlett Johansson or like on an Angelina Jolie, you know, those types of things.
But does personality ever factor into it?
I think it does. And for me, that was a huge part of in Stitches was, you know, for 4 years, I looked just the same as I did and as I do, you know, now. And I couldn't find a date for 4 years because I lacked that confidence. I mean, deep down, I was still that clumsy kid who'd go on a date and talk about his mom's cooking the whole time. And it took me until I got into medical school and I really learned what I consider to be the three rules of picking up a woman. And this is what I learned and I wrote about in the book, which is kind of a funny little thing. But number one, don't talk about your mom on the date. Number two, read Cosmo from front to back, like the Bible. And number three, carry a lighter in your pocket. And back then, now, you know, where I'm at in Michigan, they've outlawed smoking in bars. But back in the day, that was my best way to get in to meet a woman. I mean, I didn't know any attractive women that were interested in me. So, hey, you've got a lighter and you're at the bar and somebody needs a light. There you go. There's your
there
little
you
opening.
How about that? Let's squeeze in Margarita from Santa Paula, California. Really fast. Go ahead, Margarita.
Hi. I had surgery done about 10 years ago on my face, and now that I have aged, I notice that the right eye doesn't match the left. There's more wrinkles underneath, and I was thinking of having that redone, but then the doctor said, you need to know when to stop. I don't think I'm at that point to where I need to stop, but it just bothers me, and I wondered, is that going to look weird when they do that? I mean, you do look a little stretched in the beginning, and then it's sort of, you know, comes
It doesn't sound like what you're explaining to me is out of the ordinary. 10 years after having surgery to have another one, I think is very reasonable. Would just definitely recommend you see somebody face to face. Make sure they really study, you know, your face and show you some before and after pictures. Expectations are key.
Definitely. Tony, give out your website if you would. Then where can we get the book In Stitches?
Yeah, it's institchesbook.com, and I'd love to hear from your readers. There's multiple excerpts on there. They're funny. They're laugh out loud. Would love to hear what your listeners think about it. It's available on Amazon as well as Barnes & Noble.
Good luck to you, and you do a great job, by the way.
Hey, thanks, George.
All right, that's Dr. Tony Yoon, and again, his website, institchesbook.com. The name of his book, In Stitches, it's his memoir about his life as a plastic surgeon. It's pretty fascinating. We'll be back.